Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals Beat Writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. We are in off-season style, so every once in a while in the off-season, you're going to get this. You're getting the remote BBP.
Yeah.
We're pretty proud of the fact that we're everywhere.
I mean,
we can crank this baby out from just about anywhere, and right now, you are in beautiful, Jim, you're in beautiful Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl. How is Mobile?
It's chilly. I'm not going to say cold, because I know what cold is. It is chilly and rainy. It's like, you know what? It feels like March and April, so, you know, Paul, while I'm looking out the window and you would say it's crappy outside, it's also not four. so you know,
that's true.
I am keeping things in perspective for our BBP listeners who are like, you know, screw you, guy, because it's four or 12 or whatever.
Yeah, Mobile, Alabama. Let me just tell you, you earned. We discussed how we wanted to break down a few of these off-season trips, and I had gone to Mobile last year, and you kind of wanted to do this.
Yes,
like,
you're
like, yeah. You know what? I'll take Mobile, and God love you for doing that. You know, because there's not a whole lot to do. Although last year in Mobile, I did have one of the most delicious étouffées I've ever. I mean, it was so good. And this restaurant was like this little podunk out of nowhere. And there's a great lunch place right down near Ladd Peebles Stadium as well.
Okay.
The only problem is when you go during Senior Bowl week, when there's a million hungry scouts, they literally make their entire year on these 3 days,
right,
during these practices where everyone comes in and eats these sandwiches, which are delicious. But I wonder, the rest of the year, where does the business come? I mean, it's not exactly, you know, a thriving metropolis necessarily.
Right. Well, you know, AJ McCarron might disagree with you.
You're right. You know what? You're right. I assume he listens to the BBP. So I apologize to AJ for taking a shot at his hometown. You know what? It's a beautiful place in there. Although, until I went last year, the only thing I ever thought about when I thought about Mobile, Alabama was the Leprechaun YouTube video, which is just one of my favorites of all. Maybe my favorite thing that's ever been on YouTube is the leprechaun who shows up in the streets of Mobile, Alabama.
I guess the thing I was thinking of, you know, as Bengals fans know, the Cleveland videos is our economy is LeBron James. Like, you do see a lot of AJ, you know, so maybe AJ, you know, Foster.
Is there the sign?
The sale
is there
of
the
jerseys?
Sign there that says home of AJ McCarron? Is that, did you see one of those? Have they made that one yet?
I did not see one of those. I would think it's around. I mean, he's got two national titles, right?
He does. But you know what? They probably were going to put one up, and then Vontaze Burfict and Adam Jones got penalties, and they right. said, screw it. We're not doing it. That throw isn't worth anything, which
Way to bring it down.
I know. I'm sorry, Bengals fans. I know that everyone is – it still hurts. It still really hurts. And I got to tell you, I had this discussion, and you may agree with this. I mean, having some historical perspective in this city, having grown up here, even though I moved away for a while, I have a really good feel for it. That play, AJ McCarron to AJ Green, if Jeremy Hill doesn't fumble and everything that happens afterwards, if that ends as it should have 90% of the time, that throw, McCarron to Green, would go down as probably the number one sports moment in this city since 1990, since the Reds won the World Series in 90.
Yeah.
25 years, that would go down, I bet, as the number one sports moment. Only rivaled by probably when Jay Bruce hit a home run to clinch the playoffs in 2010 with that Reds team that came out of nowhere. I could not come up with another one that would rival what that would have been. And I'm sorry I made fans sad again.
Yeah, they're trying to move on, Paul.
I know, you're right.
They're like, hey, we got coaches, we got maybe new players. Everyone wants to draft Braxton Miller.
Yeah, I know. You know. I'm sorry. I just couldn't help it.
I had to share that conversation because that
throw is so overshadowed. That drive is so overshadowed by everything that happened, and it's just it's remarkable.
Yeah. No, you're right. It was the good to great players of that Bengals team sort of doing what Marvin Lewis and Hugh, at the time offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson had said, guys had to make plays for the quarterback, and that happened. Tyler Eifert and AJ Green and even Jeremy Hill, making plays and playing through some stuff. No, you're right. Honestly, Paul, for our listeners, I mean, I've traveled a bit since, the season ended. I've been to Chicago. I've been to Milwaukee. I'm down here in Alabama now. And I'll tell you, and it's not going to make anybody feel any better, but people are still talking about it. I mean, we're getting into Super Bowl week. I mean, this is, weeks later. And you're right, that throw has been overshadowed because it is about the end of the game. But, it's amazing to me, Paul, because, it's the NFL. It's the machine, right? Especially as you get to Super Bowl 50, where you're going to be at covering that for us at Cincinnati.com. And it's just – but people are still talking about that game. I can't say a national level, but at least regionally, it really stuck with people,
Yeah. Well, I think it resonated because the game was so unique, for better or for worse.
Right.
I mean, for the way it was played all right, we're not going to go. I'm sorry, Bengals fans. We're not going to go back down that. Let's do this. Let's track it forward. We're going to spend most of the time in this podcast. We gave you the two podcasts after the fallout week to really get through all of that, and we did. But where we left you off was Hugh Jackson had just been hired by the Cleveland Browns. We sort of got into that. But today I think is a good chance for us to delve into what has been the most dramatic reconfiguration of Marvin Lewis's coaching staff since he's been here, and it's not real close.
Right.
I mean, we've never seen this team that pledges continuity at every level, this franchise that believes so much in everything sort of staying the same and building on what you are has never done this. I went back. And if you go back to 2003, the most position coach changes that there's been in a season was two. Now, not counting 2013, when both coordinators left and they primarily upfilled. I mean, that was primarily inside promotions. We've never seen changeover where it wasn't quite exactly, inside promotion. I mean, we have a lot of new faces that are joining the Bengals. So let's do a quick breakdown on where that's all at, and then we'll jump into it. Now, most of the changeover and the most dramatic is on defense, where it's Paul Gunther and a bunch of new position coaches.
Right.
I mean, essentially, you have defensive line coach who was previously Jay Hayes, has left and gone to Tampa Bay, and Jacob Burney is taking over as a defensive line coach. At linebackers, Matt Burke, who came in 2 years ago along with Vance Joseph, has left, and he's gone to Miami with Vance. And Jim Haslett, former Saints head coach and has been in the league for a long time, takes over as a linebackers coach. Then you go into the secondary, and we have the return of Kevin Coyle, who was here until he took the defensive coordinator job in Miami back in 2011. He's back now, and Vance Joseph, of course, in Miami, switching places. I mean, that's your entire defensive staff. And so you got also Robert Livingston is going to come on as the assistant DBs coach.
Right.
But he's an inside promotion. He was a quality control guy last year, sort of assisting in other places. He's had a pretty quick rise. He moved up from being a scout. He was one of the new scouts they added a few years back, and had a couple years of that. Moved over to quality control for a year. Now he's in. I mean, he's one of those guys that sort of, when they talk a lot about grooming guys for the future, he clearly seems to be the next in that line. So that's your defense. I mean, a completely made over group. On offense, obviously, Ken Zampezi has taken over as the offensive coordinator for Hugh Jackson, moving from quarterbacks coach into this new OC role for the first time. We'll get a lot into that later. Interviews with him, you'll hear from Ken. James Urban stays the same at wide receivers. Kyle Kasky stays the same at running backs. Jonathan Hayes stays the same at tight ends. Paul Alexander, forever the Bengals offensive right. line coach, will continue. So you have more continuity there. Bill Lazor comes on, and he'll be added as the quarterback's coach in place of Ken Zampezi.
Right.
In his old role. I also forgot Mark Carrier, who was one of the co-DB's coaches, is no longer with the club.
Right.
So let's just start on defense, and you at the Senior Bowl spoke with Paul Gunther at length about this changeover, and you have to wonder, and this will be a huge story of this entire next 6 months, how will this defensive coaching staff pick up and find comfort and with this system, because these are all guys from the outside that don't know this system. Everybody that was here before was part of this system's birth, the system's invention, when Paul and Zim came up with this way back in 2008 when Mike Zimmer showed up here and they came up with the double A gaps and all the stuff that everyone's doing now. So it's at least it's familiar more across the league.
Right.
But it was sort of like they were partially sort of the guys that took this to the next level, sort of like the spread offense has taken over on offense. And now these guys got to come in here. And I mean, that's a lot of questions to put on a guy who is in his third year as a coordinator.
Yeah. And it's funny, we'll hear from Paul, here shortly, Paul, but you're right. And those were the questions because on paper, you look at, especially Kevin Coyle, there's some familiarity with the Bengals and what they do. But he was a coordinator, Jim Haslett, a head coach and a coordinator at a couple different spots. So on one hand, Paul acknowledges the benefit of the experience. Jacob Burney's been in the league. I mean, he came in with Bill Belichick in Cleveland in the early mm-hmm. mid-90s. And actually coached with Marvin Lewis, worked for Marvin Lewis in Baltimore. So on one hand, he believes that experience is a positive and will help massage the issues of Paul teaching coaches. But he acknowledges, and I thought, and this was good. I mean, Paul's always pretty honest with us. But he did acknowledge that they're all going to have to spend a lot of time together to answer those questions you just presented. And to make it a seamless transition for a group, there will be some turnover, but for the most part, it's a core group of guys, who have been successful. So you've got players who, and even Paul admitted, he's like, some of our players are going to know more about the defense than our coaches once we get to the spring.
And absolutely.
And so he admitted that that's going to be a process that has to be worked through. But I guess if you're, you know, if you want to lean on the positive side of things, you could say, well, if Geno Atkins has to, you know, talk about Jacob Burney, you know, about in really, I mean, Geno, I mean, it's Geno, right? So you're not kind of relying on just like an average guy, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I guess if there's going to be some back and forth, you know, and we can maybe get into some of the resumes of these guys too, just if people aren't as familiar with them, but, legitimate questions and ones that Paul Gunther is definitely aware of, and it feels, you know, they'll all have to address between, you know, when they get back to Cincinnati from Mobile.
Yeah. Let's do this. Let's bring in your conversation with Paul Gunther. And so people can get a feel for where he's at and exactly why in the hell his entire staff left him. So this is Jim with Paul Gunther in Mobile.
Sometimes, you know, change can be good. You know, you get this guy's worked their butts off for me, and they have opportunities to go. And when you have success, you have opportunity.
Right.
You know, so it wasn't anything that we were, you know, unhappy about. Any of their performances, just that's how it kind of went.
Okay. You know, Jay. So now for you, and we kind of asked you about this on the exit interview, and you were like, yeah, you know, especially with VJ, like, I have my list of guys. So is that, I guess, the unseen part of your job is sort of watching that and being ready to fill a staff so there's no surprises, or, you know, how did that kind of go for you that week?
You know, you look at it in different terms. When you're getting ready to become interviewed for a head coach, you have guys, quarterbacks coaches, receivers coaches, line coaches, tight end coaches, running. And then you have the same thing on defense. So that was easy for me because I already had that in my mind a little bit of, hey, these are the guys I would hire if that happens. So you got to be ready to do that if you're called upon as a head coach. So, you know, now that it's been just on this my side of the ball, at least, that it was easy for me to go right to that list, which I had. You know, Kevin was an easy fit because he had been here.
Right.
He knows what we're doing. So that was an easy carryover.
Okay.
And then, you know, Jim Haslett was a guy that that has a lot of experience. You know, he's been a head coach, he's been a coordinator. Right. You know, he's played the position in the league, so he was one of the guys that I was looking at anyways.
Okay.
And then with Jacob, you know, we were bringing some D-line coaches in for interviews. Jim had worked with Jake at the Redskins, and I called some players. You know, I always called the players that played on
them. Right.
You know, even with VJ, when I hired VJ and Matt, I called the players that they coached.
Right.
And say, give me some feedback, positive and negative. And because I think it's important.
Right.
You know, what the guys like, what the players think of them.
Right.
So, you know, I called around on Jake, and everything is positive, and he's got a wealth of coaching position for, I don't know, 20 years now. So,
right.
You know, I was impressed with his interview, his energy and his tenacity. I think it would be good for our group.
Is there a bit of unease, or I don't know the word, because you and Zim, I mean, together, and that, and I know you've said this, like, we built this,
right?
And now Kevin, obviously there's some history, but the fact that this is all brand new and a lot of,
it was new when Matt and VJ got here.
Okay.
I mean, I had to teach those guys. Jay was a lone holdover.
Okay.
You know, so I had to teach Matt and Vance the defense too. So, you know, you get plenty of time in the off season to go through all the particulars of everything. You know, at this point, we're, you know, trying to give an idea of what kind of players we're looking for.
Okay.
In this process, and then once we do that, you know, you have some other things, you know, as far as the X's and O's part of the deal. So
okay.
We sit down and go through the details of how we say it, I want them to say it in front of the players.
Right.
So by the time the players come back, it's pretty much, you know, in their minds, you know. Right. So
you're not uncomfortable at all with like a complete, like, it's like, you know, there's Paul and then a whole group of new faces and voices.
No, I feel comfortable.
Okay.
It's good. Sometimes, you know, obviously you lose maybe, week seven against, I don't know, St. Louis.
Right.
We did this and we did this adjustment. You remember that? You don't have quite the recall, but those things happen. You know, when you have guys that have experience, you know, they they kind of get it faster.
Okay.
You know, so.
Okay.
You think. You
right.
know, well, time will tell, but I don't have any worries about that at all.
Right.
None at all.
What were, for you, you know, in finance, and Kevin makes sense because, again, his history, but, you know, Jim and Jacob have had a lot of experience in 3-4.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you run something completely different. So, right. I mean, what was some things that really stood out to you about them and maybe what they can bring over? And
well, Jim had run a 3-4 in Washington, but he's coaching a 4-3 in St. Louis and in New Orleans.
Okay.
So, you know, right off the bat, it's one of the questions I asked him, how much familiarity does he have coaching in a 4-3? So
right.
he said, you know, he's coaching that.
Right.
And really, you're coaching technique and all that stuff. And it isn't all that different, really.
Okay.
I mean, everybody makes a big deal out of it, but
right.
And with Jacob, he was with Denver for years, and they were a 4-3 team. So,
right.
Carolina, he was with those guys. So,
right.
He's got familiar. So when he got up on the board and started talking about the blocks and things that were, he was right on the money.
Okay.
So, I'm excited. It's more of an exciting time. And of course, when you have guys that have gone through it as coordinators and
right.
those things, that, you know, they may bring ideas to the table. You know, some of them I may like, and some like, no.
Right.
This is, you know, the thing is, this is our system. This is, we know it works.
Right.
It's proven. And, you know, if there's something they can add that fits in what we're doing, we're not going to go out to left field and say, hey, let's put all this stuff in. No,
right.
We're not going to do that. But, I'm kind of happy how it went.
Right. Does it help that, I mean, you guys, there's always some roster turnover, but for the most part, it's a pretty established group of players.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that dynamic work of so you, I mean, Jay's been here for a while, and
right.
even VJ, so now it's new voices. How does that work where you've got, or is it just, hey, it's their job as players to listen to this guy? Or is camp important?
The spring's going to be important.
Okay.
You know, there's going to be some things that come up that the players know the coach may not. So
right.
that's okay. That's all part of it, you know. And there may be some things that these guys will teach the players that they haven't heard before. So that'll work hand in hand, maybe from a technique perspective. But from the X's and those things, I'm sure there's going to be some times where they're like, oh, yeah, we do it this way. You know, they don't quite have it in that area. But by the time the season rolls around, I don't see any snag.
Right.
You know, I've already gone through, you know, half the defense with Jim. So, you know, once Jacob, we get back in the office after this break, we'll start hammering it down.
Gotcha. Is and I understand this is your staff. I know, you know, you mentioned Jacob and Jim's history. I mean, there are some overlaps with Marvin. So what kind of role did Coach Lewis play with this and with some of these guys and his history of knowing them?
Right. I mean, he, you know, I know he worked with Jake at some point in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So he had worked with him. And that's always a comforting thing.
Right.
You know, but Marvin understands I'm with these guys every day.
Right.
So. He wanted to make sure I was comfortable with it, and I think that, you know, like I said, I was just looking for the best guys. I didn't care if I didn't know the guy prior.
Right.
I just wanted the best coaches for our players.
Right. I mean, you're still a young guy, but does this type of thing invigorate you a little bit as a teacher, as a coach, you know, because this is a different challenge for you as a coordinator.
Yeah.
To do this now. Like, it's,
yeah.
you know.
It's like you got to coach coaches. You do.
Right.
I mean, this is how we do it. You know, particularly in the front seven with those two new guys, Kevin kind of will have some recall
right.
of some of the stuff that we've done. But it's good. You always like teaching it, and then the most important thing is when I teach it to them, we're all saying it the same way to the players, so the message
right.
is always constant.
Right.
It's not like, hey, I used to do like this in 1999,
right.
and I'm going to talk about it like this. No, this is 2016.
Right.
This is how we're doing it. And so that's the most important part, that when we go to roll it out to the players, we're all speaking
right.
the same language.
So that's just the time together that you'll spend
mm-hmm.
between now and
exactly.
the start of spring. And
exactly.
That type of stuff.
Exactly.
Gotcha. And then just your just a quick thought there. I mean, with you know, to produce the way you guys did as a defensive unit, does it feel like there is momentum or a carryover because the voices are new and does it feel like, no, this is, I mean, I know you guys like to say this is brand new, but
right.
I mean,
right.
is this kind of like a fresh start, or do you feel, you know, the stuff you guys did last year?
I think we can build off and get it better.
Okay.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we meet a lot together anyways. I mean, I meet a lot with the defense together.
Right.
I think it's important because they can hear me correct the D lineman in one play, the safety in another, and the linebacker in another. So, you know, we do meet a lot together, but I think we can even get it better. And that's what I told Marvin. My whole thing is I want to get it better than I had it a year ago.
Right.
And bringing in guys with experience, I think, will help that.
How do you feel you grow? I mean, my first instruction to you was in the spring. It was your second year, and you're like, okay, I want to make this kind of leap from 1 to 2.
Right.
For 2 to 3, what have you done the self-eval process? Did you were you able to do that yet?
I mean, your first year, it's the first time calling. Something may come up. We dealt with a lot of injuries for the most part. Last year, we were fairly healthy.
Right.
For the most part, which helps. I mean, when your best players aren't playing, it's hard.
Right.
So when they're all playing at a high level, like I think we were at the end of the season, I thought, you know, obviously it's a crash landing when you lose, but I thought we were playing at a pretty good high level.
Right.
You know, so, and like I said, we got to get it better. We're going to add players, and we've added coaches, and it's the same way with that. You know, players trying to add pieces as we get through it.
Right.
So, you know, one question that we get often, and is a, you know, I think the first question that we all had when we heard all this news about the exodus on the defensive coaching staff was why did this happen? Is this a negative reaction to what happened in the playoff game? Is this a negative reaction to working with Paul? Is this why is this? And I think, and I don't know, we can kind of talk this through, but I do think that this was what we talked about. I mean, and we mentioned this in the last podcast, was for everyone, I think, on this staff, there was this feeling all year of the last ride. You know, everyone's going to spend the next 2 weeks talking about one final rodeo, using that quote from Peyton talking to Bill Belichick after the his championship game. But it had that feeling of the last rodeo for this group. And I think that permeated more to the defensive staff than I thought it would. I can't say I saw this kind of overhaul coming.
Right.
You know, it's like to see everyone go is pretty shocking. But I just think that there was a feel of everyone after this season and this was sort of that run for that core group decided that, hey, it's time for everyone to start moving on. And for some, that's taking advantage of better situations.
Right.
I mean, Vance, everyone knew. Matt Burke and Vance were very close. So it makes some sense that way. The Jay Hayes thing was fairly surprising to me, but when you get good offers other places, you listen.
Right.
And he's done a very nice job here.
Right.
I wrote a story about, this is before you even got here, Jim. I wrote a story, when I first started a couple years ago, full time on this beat, about their drafting strategy and finding the market inefficiency on defensive line, where so many people were drafting first round defensive linemen, and the Bengals rotation almost to a man was all second, third, fourth, fifth round. They're all further back in the draft. They hadn't drafted defensive linemen in the first round. I have to go back and look at the story. Remember it was, but I don't know if it's even been once under Marvin Lewis. Because Jay Hayes has been here the whole time in charge with developing those guys.
Right.
And done a great job. When you do that, you get opportunities elsewhere. But still, to see it all happen, I still think it's a bit of a shock for everyone, including Paul.
Right. Yeah. It's and that was sort of the thought, because you know when Vance left, I think part of this, honestly, Paul, some of it is timing. Vance Joseph, the reason he kind of became nationally known, maybe outside of coaching circles and beat writing circles, was because it was this guy wanted to interview in other places and the Bengals denied him, right? And that kind of made news, right? So I think if you know, contracts had not come up in some instances, I don't think we're having this conversation. I think you know what I mean? I think some of it was timing in that regard. But you're right. I mean, it's business. I mean, we talked in the last podcast, you started this with saying, you know, Hugh Jackson left, coordinators have left. teams want to replicate success, and the way they like to do it is by stealing from the successful teams. So,
yes.
You know, and as far as these guys, I did run into Ken Zampezi. We'll hear from him in a little bit. But, you know, obviously, if you flip to the offensive side, you're talking about one change, and that's just to replace Ken as the quarterback's coach. So, you know, he is in favor of the continuity. That's why Ken was promoted, why we felt he should be that guy. And what he said to me, actually, it was earlier on Wednesday, was it's about being hungry and not letting continuity be comfort. He's like, the way the analogy used was comfort's a gas leak. And he's like, and by the time you know you're in trouble, you're dead and it's over. So, mm-hmm. You know, I guess, you know, you look at that defensive side of the ball and so much is similar and has been similar. Defense did make some leaps in Paul Gunther's second year. But now you're talking about guys with a lot of 3-4 background, guys with a lot of experience. And you know, Jim Haslett hasn't coached a position since the 90s. I mean, he's been at the top of the food chain. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But Jacob Burney's been in the line coach for a long, long time. So I get concerned, but I also do find it, you know, maybe, you know, you're always looking for better. And for as good as the Bengals were at times as completely healthy unit, third downs were an issue. Long drives were an issue. Yes, they prevented touchdowns at times, but how many key field goals – and sustain momentum. Like that defense, for as good as it was, in a lot of ways, there were holes and things that needed to get fixed and get better, right? So to your point, though, I am curious about the developmental process because that's what this team's about, draft and develop. And I am curious about, you know, these guys and that. But Jacob, you know, again, we could talk more about it. I mean, Bernie in Denver, I mean, everyone knows of Elvis Dumervil. You know, and now, mm-hmm. granted, how much development you could say great players need, but you know, he's coached quite a few Pro Bowlers, some veteran guys who had career years, you know, in their early 30s, the mid 30s with this guy, and young guys who, you know, like a Ryan Kerrigan in Washington who started on mm-hmm. the end, and you know, those were his first sort of formative years, and then you see what he turns into, so. At least on the surface, you know, you look at some of these guys that it's like, okay, well, they've done this elsewhere. But you're right, it's all about that message with Paul and applying it to this team.
Yeah. The most interesting, I think, for people is going to be, you know, the guy that everyone's talking about, which is Vontae Perfect. So you get to Jim Haslett. And it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. You know, I don't know how much people know about Jim Haslett. I mean, outside, obviously, he was a head coach. And he actually was NFL Head Coach of the Year in 2000 when he first took over the Saints. And they went from 3-13 to 10-6. But he is kind of known as a no-nonsense type of guy. He spent 30 years in the league.
Right.
Okay. So you're not... You know, he's not going to walk in thinking that he hasn't seen somebody like Vontez Perfect. Although it's possible he right. may have not seen somebody quite like Vontez right. Perfect. He's seen plenty of guys who are young with attitude that need to be reined in or whatever you want to call it. That's going to be a very interesting dynamic. And you wonder when you have a personality that's as – should we say combustible? Is combustible a good word?
I think so.
When you have a personality like that, you have to be very careful how you handle it. Or it could be a bomb that explodes in your hand, as we saw. Jim Haslett handles it will be interesting. And I think it's kind of telling that they brought in a guy with that much experience, that much head coaching and coordinator experience into a position like linebackers coach. I think it goes to show you how much they do see it as, okay, this is a very important spot for this team going forward.
Right. And you're right, because the thing I think with Vontae is, at least in the year, and I guess I have a interesting or different look, because my first exposure to Vontaze Burfict was only this year. So I came in with questions of microfracture and when and if he could play in 2015, and sort of doing that game and tracking that. And so all I got to learn about the guy was, what is he, you know, A, is he rehabbing properly? And then B, how is he studying? How is he approaching the game and the team? And you're in the locker room as much as I am, of course. And what I thought was interesting, Paul, was how quiet he was. He was around during his absence those first 6-7 weeks of the season, but he was – you didn't hear him at all. And all I heard was, you know, Tez is studying. He's helpful. He's talking to guys on the sideline, but in a subdued fashion. And then the week he was active, you heard him. And it was the locker room dynamic change, and just like, okay, he's back and now is like reinserting himself. I imagine the way he had been as a healthy, active player since he's been here. I mean, you could speak to that. If it was the same.
It was the same.
Yeah, so I'm curious.
I mean, it was the same, and it was what we talked about. It was all of a sudden there's drama.
Right.
You know? It's all of a sudden there's this thing going on, this sort of abrasive thing that is now, and I think a lot of them like that, but I mean, right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that was what he brought.
So I'm curious about but I guess where I'm going is I didn't hear anything or see anything during the week that was like over the top or crazy or, you know, fights with teammates or coaches or whatever. It always seemed the issues were game day, like those 60 minutes. And that's what I'm sort of curious about is with Jim Haslett is like, what I was told and what I saw was, you know, Tez was he would study. He knows the defense. He, you know, obviously we know that Paul Gunther raves about him. I mean, even Matt Burke talked about, you know, the guy's just, he knows what everyone is doing, where they're supposed to be. He helps in a lot of those ways, but it was this energy. I'm curious to find out is Jim Haslett coaching, developing these other guys and sort of like game day, you know, because we saw Marvin in that wild card game, like physically restraining Tez and Tez physically going to Marvin. And it's weird because like a head coach really shouldn't be dealing with a singular player like that. So, like, I am curious about that. I got to meet Jim Haslett briefly. I'm hoping to find him again here in these next couple of days here in Mobile and really kind of get into this with him, even if it's just a talk. But that you're right, Paul. I think that of all the changes, I think that's, like, the most interesting thing because, you know, Burfict's such – I mean, the one thing Jim Haslett did say upon my introduction, Vontaze Burfict is a heck of a player.
Right.
And
I don't think anybody would deny that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think you can watch the guy play and deny that. But his growth area and in that same vein, the growth area of this defense and possibly the of this team is in his development and not hurting them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's it. I mean, if he plays between the whistles, the way he played between the whistles, right, you have no problem with anything.
Right.
But it's the other stuff. And you know, I'm looking forward to dabbling in this idea of being labeled as a dirty player here as this offseason continues and talking to a lot of guys about that. But with Tez, it's only going to get worse. I mean, what happened in that playoff game is going to put this spotlight on him even more than there already was.
Right.
And anytime he's doing things, people are going to be looking for it even more so than they were before. And that's going to be a part of his game that he's going to have to try to get figured out. So we'll have lots of time to get into that, and we'll have longer sit downs with Jim Haslett, and hopefully at some point talk to Tez when they return in a few months to the team and for off-season program. But a lot of interesting dynamics when you've got to coach the coaches before you can coach the players and see how that affects things. And, you know, I think having Paul Gunther there. I mean, there's your continuity right. for the most part, but there's going to be a lot of adjustments
right.
with position coaches there for sure. Let's flip it over to the offensive side of the ball now. So there you do have a lot, you know, the word continuity did play out.
Right.
And just like we thought it would with Ken Zampezi coming in, we sort of figured your number one goal is Andy Dalton riding the train, you know, keep rolling this baby straight and running with what got him to the next level. And Ken Zampezi has been his position coach. He's one of the smartest guys you'll ever meet. The question was his lack of experience. I think the question before they hired him, then we talked about it on the last podcast, was, you know, funny thing here, he got passed over twice,
right?
By Marvin Lewis, and when they fired Bob Rutkowski and brought in Jay Gruden, Ken Zampezi was part of those conversations, and when they moved on and hired Hugh Jackson, Ken Zampezi was again part of those conversations. This ended up being his time. Now, I think they're comfortable with that. He'll be different than other guys, but I think it goes to show that, I mean, when they hired Hugh Jackson, to me, that was a no-brainer hire.
Right. Had
this guy who's an offensive guru, who'd been a head coach, all that experience, relationship with Marvin. The one, and if you could go back to Jay Gruden, you know, that's the more concerning. Like, oh, why didn't they go with Ken at that point? But right. I think they also, that was the reboot. I mean, they were right. looking for fresh. They wanted everything fresh. They didn't want continuity at that point.
Right.
So I think it's not as maybe egregious as some would think. The concept of being passed over, and to his credit, Ken never viewed it that way at all. He's as likable as a guy as you'll meet. I want to, before we dive too far into this, I want to bring in some of Ken Zampezi, from his introductory press conference and sort of his take on that whole concept of the passed over thing and some of Marvin Lewis's thoughts on that too. So here's a little bit from the press conference introducing Ken Zampezi.
Well, I'm blessed. The fact that we have tried to cultivate, you know, the coaches from within, and when they're in the positions and leadership positions and so forth, and continue to grow their input. I'm a part of our game plan meetings and so forth, and the input that the others have along in the staff and the coordinator and so forth. So you're able to know when people are to the point that they're a contributor like that, and that's important. Because as their role expands, the responsibility expands, and so forth, and so that's important. So we've been fortunate to continue with adding people to the staff that have those kind of qualities.
You obviously saw a lot of you, and you see a lot of Ken. Has there been any talks? Was there any talks with Ken about a succession plan in this process?
Well, Ken's been through this process a couple of times with me when we hired Jay, particularly. Ken and I spent a lot of hours together, and I made the decision at that point to hire Jay Gruden. So, and obviously even when Jay left, and Ken and I spoke again. So I guess that's sort of a plan, you know what I mean? But in those two instances, I chose to go a different direction. This time, I really chose to go with Ken.
In that sense, does it almost feel like it was 2 years ago when you came in? I mean, very little.
Is he calling in?
Yeah,
I guess so. I guess so. There's always a personality change when the top changes, and we'll roll with that too. You know, we'll put a spin on that as our staff gets together and see which way we want to go for these players.
As personalities go, no one's can be like you. He's pretty unique. So, I mean, how hard is that though? Is that an easy thing for you to just realize no one's going to be like the guy before me? I just got to kind of take on your own personality, not try to replicate any of that. Or
what's important is being who you are,
yeah,
and using your own unique talents that now you have a chance to do in front of everybody, mm-hmm, and push them forward with your own personality. That's going to be a challenge. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And you talked about the family and the love for the organization. When you do get passed over a couple times, how tough is that to stay?
Well, I never looked at it like that. I felt very fortunate to work here and work in the NFL, especially here. You know, when your input's valued at all times, that goes a long way, and it's always been like that here. And when you know you have the support of the organization at all times, the way the Brown family and Coach Lewis is, I never looked at it that way. Mm-hmm. Never. I just thought, you know what, hey, we'll see what happens down the road. I'm going to do the best I can to support the guy in that position. And we're going to be best of friends because we're going to work so closely together. And I'm going to have an opportunity to have another good friend. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
All right, so there's Ken Zampezi, new offensive coordinator, sort of talking about that role. And I, listen, it's the same things we were talking about. This is all about Andy Dalton,
right?
And I think that's what makes this good. And I think as much as anything, this was a promotion for Andy Dalton,
right?
Is what I mean. This was we talk a lot about Tom Brady, and we talked about Peyton Manning when he was in Indianapolis especially. How many people talked about their coordinators?
Right.
I mean, okay, I guess we talk about Josh McDaniels, but how much of a difference did they have on when you have really great quarterbacks? The really great coordinators have great quarterbacks and get out of the way.
Right.
You know, you install the game plan. There's a lot to it. I mean, and you can't undersell what a good coordinator can do. But when you have a high-end quarterback, let's be honest, it's much more about the quarterback than anything else. When you need the great coordinator when you don't have the quarterback.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that kind of part of it?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And I think the steps that Andy Dalton took, I mean, the guy was in the MVP conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, honestly, it comes down to that. You know, you're talking about a 10-2 team and an MVP caliber quarterback, and you know, the way the year ended in New England, and the way the year it would have been basically if the Bengals finished 14-2, it's a Cam Newton Andy Dalton race. Who would have thought that? You know, and Cam probably would have got it anyway. But it was just Zampezi's interesting because that is the thing, and is that continuity, and it's just one change on the offensive staff, to fill his role, because they really like what happened. And, and I guess if you're the pessimist, and we know, and I know no Bengals fans are pessimists at all.
No, they
may look at it and say, how come Hugh doesn't want to take guys? And how come no other teams want to take these guys? And it's like, well, which do you want? Do you want teams raiding your staff, or do you want guys to stick around? And I think part of it too is, frankly, James Urban's a young guy. Kyle Kasky's a very young guy in their careers. Paul Alexander obviously is entrenched here, and I don't know what it would take for him to leave. So, it's just a different sort of dynamic in some ways there. But, you're right. I think it speaks to the quarterback and what he can do in this offense. And, people want to know what's going to be different with Ken. And honestly, Paul, I don't think we'll know until he starts calling plays and that rhythm changes, or you might see a different design or something. But you know what I mean? But until then, it's like status quo. QB.
Yeah.
QB1, yeah. Right?
yeah. And to me, the biggest change is Hugh Jackson as motivator. I mean,
yeah.
Hugh had a way of getting the most out of guys, and obviously did that with Andy. And with a lot of guys, I mean, he has that ability to keep that foot square on the butt and keep guys playing to their highest level. And, I don't think anybody, Ken Zampezi's offensive mind is never going to be questioned. He's
right.
And he really has an unbelievable understanding for offense and all that stuff, and super smart guy. It's going to, where he's going to have to prove himself is along those lines, along the motivational lines. Not that he can't, but when you're following Hugh Jackson, to me, that's the hole.
Right.
I mean, that's what you're losing, is you're losing a guy who was a master motivator, who guys had their best years under him, all the way back to Chad Johnson and TJ. I mean, when Hugh was their position coach, they were having their best years. And that doesn't mean that he's the full reason, and I'm sure he would tell you it's all the players earned that, but he has a way. I mean, Andrew Whitworth is out there telling us the last week of the season, if you're not hiring this guy, you're crazy, because he is an unbelievable, and going on and on about how he motivates guys and keeps guys,
right,
you know, on edge. That's something. This is the guy who's the leader of your locker room talking about how this guy is a master motivator and basically saying he needs to be a head coach. And that's great, but you're losing that.
Right.
And there is a bit of a hole there. And they're going to need other guys to step up and be part of that, you know, motivational area, whether it's Andy Dalton or whether it's, Andrew Whitworth, who's going to be around next year, or right, whoever. But, you know, that's going to be part of, everyone's going to have to kind of band together,
right,
in that way, I think.
And that's, just real quick, ahead. I mean, that kind of brings in the new coach, which is Bill Lazor, former offensive coordinator, worked with Kevin Coyle in Miami. The one change and running into Ken, and we'll, you know, I'll be able to touch on this down the line for Cincinnati.com. It's just, that was one of the reasons Ken wanted to find Bill, because of his work with QBs in the past, and you know, Ken had to say, he's like, look, it's I'm kind of handing this off now. You know, Andy and AJ McCarron were my guys, and now I have to pay attention to the entire picture. So I think part of that motivation and that coachy teaching is going to come from the new guy. And Ken said, you know, his history, his work with, under Mike Holmgren and now with Mike Martz, and being around coaches like that and having also called plays himself, you got to have a personality, right? To be an OC, you got to be a coordinator. And I think Ken thought Bill would be a good match and to help fill some of that as well, at least with the quarterbacks.
Yeah, and we'll see how that all goes. Another minor change that I wrote about, and this isn't going to be something that's going to make or break your season, but I do think it's interesting in that when you consider the construction of this franchise, and that was scout Greg Seaman going to Cleveland with Hugh Jackson to take over as a tight ends coach. And people say, well, they lost a scout. Like, who cares? You know, right, it's whatever. But Greg had been here for a long time. He'd been a scout since 2004. He was really a part of the core. They only really have four primary scouts, okay? You know, and their philosophy in that area is less is more. Duke Tobin, who runs that ship, has the idea that I don't need more voices in the room. I just need the right voices.
Right.
And that has paid off in big time in recent years. I mean, they have really had a very clear view of what they want. And that comes from having guys that have been around, and everyone's very comfortable with what a Bengals player looks like and what coaches like and all that type of stuff.
Right.
Greg was a right voice and one of the small group of right voices. It's a little bit of a loss, particularly this time of year when now you're going, I mean, Jess leaves now, right as you're getting into all your, and they did a lot obviously back during the season, but
right,
you know, all your evaluation is kind of going on now, and you're sort of, one of your top guys is now in Cleveland as a tight ends coach. Let the Hugh Jackson exodus begin. I mean, it's right, like, here we go. Who's coming with me? It's the old Jerry Maguire, you know?
Right.
I mean, he's standing there with his memo and his fish. And who's coming with me?
Right.
And is it just going to be one scout? Is it going to end up being more than that? And we've talked about that before, but, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. But I think that's a small underrated piece of news that came out that would be easily overlooked.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, this, I think for any team that does draft and develop well, because of course every team, I mean, if we went to every GM, that's what we want to do. Look, the Bengals do it and they do it well. So I think anytime there's going to be a department, look, that's why Duke Tobin was beating away interview requests with a stick.
Yep.
I mean, you know, people want what the Bengals have and what they do. So you're right, Paul. I think it was really, smart on Hugh Jackson's part, and he has a long, long history with Greg, which probably played into that as well. Who knows? Maybe he wanted to get into coaching. Maybe that's considered a promotion in ways. You're right. I think, especially going into a year, you kind of roll in. Look, the entire coaching staff is here. They all evaluate players. They all look for, as what you just said, a Bengals player. Because you don't have. I mean, I've seen teams here, Paul, and I know you've seen this in the past. There's like, there's like dozens of guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like just for one group, it's a thin operation, but like you said, it's sort of by design, I think it is something worth watching, especially as we head into the draft and who they pick and what kind of guys that they pick. I know it's only one person, but again, you're talking about what, 25% then?
25% exactly. Of those underneath Duke. I mean, right. It's not like it's nobody.
Right.
Especially a guy who's been doing it for 12 years.
Right.
Like I said, it's not going to make or break your season or right. whatever, but an interesting note as kind of just more of, the franchise that builds itself on continuity
right.
going through change, and how will a franchise that builds itself on continuity handle change right. is going to be a big question going forward. So what do we got? You see, you're down at the Senior Bowl for a couple of days, enjoying beautiful Mobile, talking to players that we are going to be spending the next 3 months discussing, which I'm not going to lie, and some people might not want to hear this. Draft start the beginning of draft coverage right. makes me so sad.
Oh yeah,
it makes me. I hate what you're doing right now is the worst. There are photos people were tweeting out the other day of the 850 dudes in the auditorium in Mobile as they trot the guys up for their weigh-ins, looking at dudes rolling up in their underwear. And it's like, God, how did we come to this point?
Right.
How did we come to this point where there's just a bunch of people, 800 people in an auditorium watching a dude walk up in his underwear and weigh himself? And it's old, and it's gonna be even, the combine is the same damn thing. And we've got so much time till April 28th. Right. And I'm not gonna lie. I know you guys want your draft coverage, and you'll get your draft coverage. We'll give you plenty. The combine's coming up the end of February as well. But oh my God, it's so exhausting. Because here's the thing. We'll talk for three, and I'm on the soapbox right now. I'm going off. We will talk for 3 months about all these guys, right? Oh my goodness. And then as soon as somebody's drafted, nobody cares.
Nope.
Just tell us about the guy they took. And that's all that really matters.
Right.
And we can break down the like three or four they were basically choosing between. But like the concept of this is a guy they gotta have in round seven is just. It's just, especially this time. I don't mind the last month. You get into the last month before the draft. Let's dive in and really embrace it. But right now, when the Super Bowl hasn't even been played yet, and we're talking, I know how hard it is for me. I can't imagine how hard it is for the Bengals coaches to really sit there and be like, God, I can't believe we're sitting here having to worry about talk about this stuff right now.
Right.
Just coming off of what they came off of, man. That has got to be a tough thing to restart that engine.
Yeah. Without a doubt, it is. It's a little, it's got to be a little bitter. And even Paul, going back to the start of the BBP, Paul Gunther is just like, look, I'm kind of telling the guy, like, they are literally just sort of starting this. And mm-hmm. there's guys they like. There's guys who are popping for them. I'm trying to find out who they are. They're not really giving that up just yet. But, defensively, Paul's like, I'm trying to tell these guys who we're looking for. So it's a weird mix of like scouting, but also teaching how to scout, and that type of
yes.
Ken Zampezi told me, he's like, I found myself just like hanging out with the quarterbacks at the start of Senior Bowl. He's like, wait a minute, I've got to like watch everybody, because it's kind of the thing right. he's done for so long. So I definitely, here's the funny thing. What I find Paul Alexander, so I think this embodies to me the draft process for the Bengals? Because, you know, loyal BBP fans know I started with the Inquirer the week of the draft. So I didn't do any of this with you last year. I rolled in and it was Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher, and there you go. But so I'm standing at Ladd People Stadium. Paul Alexander walks in and people automatically just start giving him a hard time. What are you doing here? Didn't you get two tackles the first two rounds last year? Why are you here? You know, just giving him a hard, giving him a business about it. But it was like, but that's the thing. Like, that's what the Bengals do, right? They just, they draft late in the round, and it's the best guy at that spot. And it's not like, you know, you're people are chasing down Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson, quarterback this, or, you know, the Bills, you know, are you going to take a QB high? And they're, you know, the Bengals aren't in that spot. They're, on one hand, it's a luxury, Paul, but at least for us, it's hard because it's like, what do the Bengals think of players A, B, C, and D? Well, you know, it almost doesn't matter because, like, unless those guys are going to be there, they may take the best wide receiver, the best, I can't imagine them take a tackle, but, you know, if Adolphus Washington from Ohio State falls all the way down, who's to say they don't take that kind of tackle? You know what I mean? Like, it's
no position outside of quarterback that's off limits for this team in the first two rounds, and they proved that last year. But Jim, you're going down this hole.
I'm doing it for
you,
buddy.
We're not going to do this. Don't do this. We're not going to go down this hole right now. We've got a whole lot of weeks of BBPs to fill with this conversation. So let's not do it right now. Let's just wrap this up. Because here's the thing. We have this team has no clue what it even would want in the draft until they get through free agency.
Exactly.
And what happens in the couple of weeks before the new league year starts on March 9th will be the two most important weeks of the entire offseason. How many guys can they get back, and who they do and don't get back will affect what direction that they're going to have to go to on the first day of the draft. That is what we're going to continue looking at for now. And then we'll get to your draft stuff later, all you draft people I know.
Right.
You love it. Guess what? There's a million freaking people out there writing about the draft, so go ahead and read about that until we hop on the Bengals draft train after free agency, which is more important right now. So, sorry, Draft Nick. I know you all hate me, but that's just where we're at. All right. Well, I think we should get out of here. You know what? So you're in Mobile, beautiful Mobile. Yeah. So I have an idea, and it's fairly cliche, but I don't know if you have an idea for a song to take us out.
You know, I think I'll roll with you on this one.
Okay.
I'm not beholden to anything. You know, I think we got to leave on a high note, and right now all I'm thinking is rain and like it's gray, and you know I spilled coffee earlier, so I think we'll go with you because okay. I might make people sad.
you're gonna go with sad. Well, you know what? It's Skinnered. It's fun. It's relevant. Everybody loves Sweet Home Alabama.
Right.
It's just a great. It's a classic in every way, shape, and form. So I think we go with that to take us out since you're down there for this edition. And we will, of course, be back with BBP. We'll keep on rolling on. I'm going to be at the Super Bowl next week gathering some stuff from players and coaches and everybody. The whole football world will be out there. So I'm going to be out there all next week. We'll call in and do a BBP from there. So look for another one next week from the Super Bowl. And then we get tracking towards the combine and free agency. So all that is coming. Keep checking back Cincinnati.com for everything. We're looking forward to continue bringing your coverage from wherever the heck we are in the United States or beyond. CFL, maybe we'll do a CFL podcast. get back up to Toronto or something. Anyway, so yeah, appreciate everybody. Keep checking everything out. And Leonard Skinner, welcome, Sweet Home Alabama. We'll talk to you later.